Microphones are live.
Good morning. Please take your seats and we'll begin the meeting. Tess? Good morning. Good morning.
I don't know that it's caught us.
If you button again, it could be twice, and sometimes it's fixed. Test 1-2. Yeah. Is that live?
I believe we're live.
Rob, can you hear me?
It's good. We're good. Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the May 13th San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Please stand and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you read the changes to the agenda, please?
Your first item that's changed is an amended item on consent is A12, a submittal of a resolution by the Auditor Controller approving the Paso Robles Cemetery District's request to withdraw their cemetery funds from the control of the County Treasurer. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is recommending this item be amended by replacing the staff report to change the date of the report to May 13, 2008. Added item on consent is item A17, a submittal of a resolution authorizing the Public Works Director to process contract change order number 2 for the construction of petroleum pipeline protection improvements along Halcyon Road in Napomo and a corresponding budget adjustment in the amount of $100,000, reimbursement from ConocoPhillips, 4th District. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Added item on presentation is B1C. Submittal of a resolution by the Sheriff Coroner commending Lily Hawkins for proper use of 911 public safety system. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. One more item that was amended was A8, a submittal of 1, a resolution authorizing execution of the notice of completion for the construction of a bridge over San Luis Obispo Creek at San Luis Bay Drive, Avila Beach, and a 2, approve a corresponding budget adjustment to increase contribution of Avila Road impact fee revenue to compensate the reduced federal revenue to the project. 3rd District, recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is recommending this item be amended to add the notice of completion and acceptance that was inadvertently left out of the packet. The replacement page is attached for your approval. And those are the changes to the agenda today.
Thank you. With that, we'll move on to the consent agenda. And I'll open the floor for public comment on items on the consent agenda. I have no request to speak, so I'll bring it back to the board and ask my colleagues if there are any items on consent that they would like to speak to. Supervisor Obit.
No items.
Supervisor Gibson?
None, sir.
Supervisor Asajian?
None, sir.
Supervisor Lenthal?
Yes, I'll break the routine. A8 for a comment, please.
Okay, and I have none. So Supervisor Lenthal?
Yes, on A8, it's kind of a routine matter when we pay our bills and have a final notice of work at completion, but we have some people in the audience, and there's a couple of county employees I'm looking for. Mike Britton, are you there? Mike's there. Dave Flynn.
He's sitting back there.
The San Luis Bay Bridge replacement had some milestones. Not only did we get very few, if any, complaints, but it was finished ahead of schedule and under budget. And in these times, in building a bridge of several million dollars, I think that's something to thank county staff for. So I wanted to thank Mike and Dave. And I didn't know if Rob Burke was here because he said he had a potential conflict, but got to give Burke Construction a plug to say that they were very, very easy to work with. And the neighbors, quite frankly, said they were going the extra mile to make sure that their needs were met when they had to close streets, when they had to do certain things that caused a lot of impact in the neighborhood. So I want to thank Mike and Dave and county staff because I think this is going to be one that's going to be hard to beat. You really raised the bar in construction projects, so thank you.
I agree. If I could add on, I got an email that I did forward to Public Works from a friend of mine who works very close to the construction. This person, shall we say, takes a careful look at how the county conducts business in every manner, and is a constructive critic, I would say. But the email was gushing in its praise for county staff and the project being done ahead of schedule, and the safety improvements were thought to be a huge improvement over that in that part of the world. So, congratulations.
Move to approve consent calendar.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent calendar as amended. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Unlike last week, things are moving quickly this morning. We'll move on to presentations. I need a motion to approve.
Second.
Supervisor Asajian, Supervisor Lenthal.
Thank you.
Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal.
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Aye. It gives me great pleasure to read the first resolution this morning, and that is one recognizing May 11th through 18th, 2008, as National AmeriCorps Week, and honoring the Central Coast Volunteer Corps. And Stephen Lamb, who is the director of the AmeriCorps Central Coast Volunteer Group, if you would come forward, please. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas AmeriCorps was created in 1993 under the Clinton administration through the National and Community Service Trust Act to create a nationwide corps of citizens dedicated to national service. And whereas in September 1994, the first class of AmeriCorps volunteers, 2,000 strong, began serving in more than 1,000 communities. And in July 3, 2003, President Bush signed the Strengthen AmeriCorps Program Act, which nearly doubled the number of AmeriCorps members. And whereas the Central Coast Volunteer Corps was established as a local AmeriCorps program at the Cal Poly Community Center, enrolled its first members in January 2007. Whereas the Central Coast Volunteer Corps begins the second program year and now consists of 37 members ranging in age from 18 to 65, from college students to recently retired who are working at 29 nonprofit agencies throughout the county. And whereas May 11th to 18th has been designated as National AmeriCorps Week, and local Corps members will celebrate this event by serving their community at the third annual homeless stand down on May 29th. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby declare May 11th to 18th, 2008, as National AmeriCorps Week in San Luis Obispo County and honors the Central Coast Volunteer Corps. Thank you.
Thank you. Districts. They are, as we said, in 37 nonprofits. I mean, there's 37 of them. They're in 29 nonprofits. The nonprofits range from nonprofits working in the environmental issues, in the arts, in health and human services. And what's very unique about this corps, the Central Coast Volunteer Corps, is it's the only capacity building model in the state. What that means is that these members are charged with helping nonprofits get better, helping them build their resources, helping them fundraise, helping them write grants, helping them manage their volunteers. So what they're corralling are the resources of this county, the citizens of these counties, and empowering them to be engaged. And so I'm so proud of them. And I want to acknowledge Amber Tierney, who is our program coordinator, for all the work that she's done. So thank you very much for acknowledging us.
Thank you. And thank you, Stephanie. And thank you, core members. Supervisor Ovett.
I guess one of the privileges of being here as long as I have been is that with an organization called Lightspans, we actually signed the first AmeriCorps to start around 1994 and carried it on until Lightspans could no longer handle it. And then, as I understand it, went to Cal Poly and now here. And I'm very excited and proud to see the members of the AmeriCorps still active and still involved throughout the communities they are in this number of years.
Thank you, Supervisor Ovett. And I, too, want to thank all the members. I've had the opportunity over the years to work with several AmeriCorps volunteers, and all of us on the board are involved with a number of nonprofits, and we recognize how important it is to work with them, to help them get funding through grants, and also to coordinate the volunteer efforts. So we're indebted to you all, and thank you for being here this morning. We're proud to recognize all of you for the work that you do. With that, we have another proclamation. Supervisor Gibson, will you do us the honor, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a resolution proclaiming World Viral Hepatitis Awareness Day, and if I could have Edie Kahn of the Hep C Project come to the podium, I'd be pleased to read the following resolution, which is hereby offered. Whereas over 520 million people worldwide are chronically infected with viral hepatitis, over 5 million people in the U.S. are infected with hepatitis C and 1.5 million with hepatitis B. And whereas chronic infections from the hepatitis B and C viruses affect nearly 1 million Californians, and in San Luis Obispo County there are 4,500 people infected with hepatitis B and or C since 2000. And whereas the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimate that approximately 30,000 new cases of hepatitis C infection and 60,000 new cases of hepatitis B infection occur annually in the United States, with 15,000 Americans dying of viral hepatitis each year. And whereas hepatitis can lead to liver disease, cirrhosis, liver cancer, and liver failure, and because liver cancer from hepatitis B and C kills more people in California than anywhere in the country, and whereas the cost of prevention can be as low as $60 for vaccination for hepatitis B, and even less for educational efforts for all viral hepatitis, as opposed to the $750,000 for liver transplantation. And whereas hepatitis awareness education campaigns, accessible screening for hepatitis B and C, along with appropriate treatment, can reduce the damage from hepatitis B and C viral infection to individuals and to our community, financially as well as physically and emotionally. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim May 19, 2008, as World Virus Hepatitis Awareness Day in San Luis Obispo County.
Chairperson Patterson, Supervisor Gibson, and other supervisors. My name's Edie Kahn, and I'm the executive director of the Slow Hep C Project, a community-based program dedicated to supporting the needs of people living with hepatitis C here in our county. And we want to thank you for proclaiming May 19th World Viral Hepatitis Awareness Day in San Luis Obispo County. We've been in existence since the year 2000 and have served over 575 clients since we opened our doors, working to connect them with physicians, finding affordable ways to access costly medications, linking clients with benefits, supplying food from our food pantry program and nutritional counseling through our partnership with Cal Poly. And by the way, those first nutritional counselors that we had were AmeriCorps members, and our first volunteer coordinator for the Slow Hep C Project, also an AmeriCorps member. Providing transportation through volunteers, community connections for housing, mental health counseling, and substance abuse services. And the project, luckily, has had ongoing support from the preventive health grants through the county. Unfortunately, most of the rest of the state, the country, and the world are just beginning to pay as much attention to the escalating viral hepatitis epidemic as our own county has. As you heard in the board's proclamation, the numbers are quite staggering. 520 million people worldwide are infected with viral hepatitis. HIV numbers are just above 40 million, so you can see the impact is quite huge. In our small corner of the world, 4,500 cases have been identified since 2000. So our county obviously has taken many steps that are progressive in dealing with this disease. And in the last year, a statewide group, the California Hepatitis Alliance, or CalHEP, has rallied influential citizens, physicians, policymakers, and service providers to work on the issue of viral hepatitis statewide. And because of our success and our innovative programming, the Slow Hep C project was asked to be part of that steering committee. CalHEP is focusing on education and advocacy to build awareness and to effect change on a legislative level that will hopefully translate to action and services in our community. An advocacy day was held in Sacramento where representatives from counties across the state spoke with 26 legislators regarding the impact of Hep B and C and the status of the response in their represented areas. We're following two bills and will keep the board informed on their progress. Viral hepatitis, both B and C, are preventable diseases, and with community awareness of the risk factors and educational efforts, we would be able to give the disease a very different face. As it was said in the proclamation, $60 for a vaccination can help stop Hep B, and community health centers in our community is offering that to our clients and to high-risk populations. Progressive programs like the county's syringe exchange could essentially stop the spread of Hep C and HIV for IV drug users, and the availability of a 20-cent clean needle can do that job. We in San Luis Obispo County can be thankful that these programs exist, that we have taken the important steps to protect our community and combat viral hepatitis. And many thanks to all of those who are involved in this effort, especially the hardworking staff of the Slow Hep C Project and the volunteers of the Syringe Exchange Program. Recognizing the problem is the first step to solving it, and San Luis Obispo has taken so many steps beyond that first step. We should count the recognition of World Viral Hepatitis Awareness Day as another step along that road. So thank you very much.
Edie, thank you. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a chance to be briefed by Edie on the Slow Hep C project a week or two ago. And I think it's interesting that you mentioned that it's funded largely through the preventative health grants. And to me, what strikes me so much about this, the program that you operate and the attack that you're taking on this disease, is the preventative side, which is a complex early intervention, because the populations that you deal with can often be challenging, whether it's homelessness or addiction. And I just wanted to commend the Slow Hep C Project on their efforts to get out into the community and to try to do the kind of preventative public health work that is so important to the health of our communities as a whole.
Thank you.
Yes, and Edie, I just want to add to that. I appreciate the fact that you mentioned the syringe exchange program that this board approved over a year ago, and it was actually brought to us by Dr. Thomas of the Public Health Department and his recommendation to support this program. And through the work of the Public Health Department, law enforcement, and the private sector, we were able to introduce that program as a preventive program. And it rings true, the old adage that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And I'm grateful that this board saw the wisdom in doing that, because in a report that we just recently received, the program has turned out to be extremely effective, and the idea of that program was to prevent the spread of communicable diseases like hepatitis C. So thank you for your efforts, and we remain supportive of your efforts.
Thank you very much.
We have another presentation to make that came in just recently, and we're excited about it. And I'm going to let Supervisor Asajian speak to that. Supervisor Asajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have read several resolutions today and through the many, many years that most of us were elected as supervisors. As where this resolution belongs and how important it is to all of us and what does it really mean, you'll know. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but where we're going to start with this resolution first, if I may, hopefully we can reorganize ourselves where we can hear this CD first, so that will make more sense to our audience here and via radio as why are we doing this resolution. And second, on at that time, after we hear the CD or the tape, even though it's been downsized because it would have been much longer event than I really want to see happen here, I would like to invite at that time the young lady who was with us, Lily, to accept the resolution. At the same time, I want to ask all the folks, the staff members from the Sheriff's Department, to line up for a picture. But when we're ready to take a picture, what I would like to do is, Lily, because of her size and being so young, I'm going to ask her to come up where the supervisors are, and she can stand on my chair. And any family member that she has with her, plus and also the dispatcher, to join us up here while we have the rest of the folks on the front. That way, we want to be sure that she looks good and big in the picture. With that, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would like us to hear the dispatcher's call, the 911 call.
Emergency.
My dad's having a seizure.
Okay, Sudie, where are you?
I'm in Oceano.
Okay, do you live on...
Yes.
How old are you?
I'm 9.
You're 9?
Yes.
And is he still having a seizure?
Yes.
Okay, are you home by yourself?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to get some help out there, okay?
Yes.
Okay, we've got some help on the way, okay?
How long will it be?
They're coming right there from Oceano, so it shouldn't be very long.
Okay.
Do you want to stay on the phone with me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll stay on the phone. Who else is there with you?
Nobody.
Nobody?
Daddy. Yeah.
Okay, where's your mom?
She's at work.
Does she work in Oceano?
No, she works in Paso.
Okay, we have some deputies on the way. They're going to help you. I'm going to stay on the phone until they get there, okay?
Okay.
Okay, you might hear some sirens, okay, when they get closer?
Okay.
You did a really good job calling 911. Okay, there's a police car outside. Do you feel comfortable letting them in the front door?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to stay on the phone with you while you let them in, okay?
Okay.
Okay, they're right up front. So take me to the front door with you.
There's not a police car outside.
He should be there.
Yes.
What apartment are you in, sweetie? Okay. He's outside. He's trying to find your apartment number.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to stay right here with you until you see him.
They're not here yet.
Okay. Can you hear the sirens yet from the fire department?
No.
Okay, they're on their way.
Yeah, I can hear them.
Okay, you can hear the sirens?
Yes. Yeah. They're here.
They're here? Are you out with the police officer?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to hang up with you, okay?
Okay.
He's going to help you out.
Thank you. Should have probably read the resolution before we heard the tape.
While we still can.
Well, let me thank Under Sheriff Paltz for bringing this to our attention, and I also want to thank Vicki Jensen from my office and also Leslie Brown, who helped us go through the red tape to be sure that this was to happen today. While I'm taking a breath, what either the sheriff or Mr. Balls or Mr. Bream would like to say a word, then I would read the resolution.
Be happy to. Pat Hedges, Sheriff Corner. While our dispatchers in the Sheriff's Department and local police departments take scores of 911 calls on a daily basis, there are some that truly stand out, and oftentimes it's because of the criminal nature of a call. But there are those that come through, such as this one, that with the exception of editing out the addresses and some of the medical issues, this was one of those true 911 calls that that we receive at times. And dispatchers, from their end, learn through their training and experience to adapt to the different types of calls. Unfortunately, we don't have that opportunity to train the people that call 911 that often, but we do have a program here in the county that does provide the training for 911 for kids. And although Lily has not had the opportunity to go through that training, she performed admirably, to the point where she is also going to be recognized up in Sacramento next week by the 911 for Kids program, and will be recognized also at the state capitol, just for the what she did with her father going through some seizures and her ability to work with our dispatcher. So with that, are we prepared to...
thank you, Sheriff. You know, once a year I like to give a plug to the International Footprinters that most of us are members to. We do honor the dispatchers. And I would have liked to honor our dispatcher too, but I was told by the dispatchers that this is what makes their job worth doing, and they don't do it for the recognition. But at this time, may I ask the dispatcher to stand and be recognized, please? Being so patient and handling the situation better than ever expected. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to read this resolution recognizing Lily Hawkins of Oceano for the proper use of 911. The following resolution is now offered and read. Whereas the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff Department is the public safety answering point for 911 emergency calls in all unincorporated areas of San Luis Obispo County. And whereas public safety dispatchers employed by the Sheriff's Department provide 911 for kids instruction to first grade classes in many county schools. And whereas on April 24, 2008, shortly after noon, 9-year-old Lily Hawkins of Oceano discovered that her father was having a medical emergency and was unable to speak. And whereas Lily used the telephone and immediately called 911 to seek emergency medical assistance for her father. And whereas Lily followed proper procedure and instructions for reporting her location and the nature of the medical emergency. And whereas, because Lily remained calm and precise, the public safety dispatcher receiving the call was able to promptly dispatch emergency services. And whereas, two deputy sheriffs on patrol in Oceano responded to the residents and Lily, while following instructions from the dispatcher, helped the deputies find her home and opened the door for them. And whereas emergency medical services providers were able to provide medical care and treatment promptly. And whereas Lily's quick action and proper use of 911 may have saved her father's life and is an example for other children to learn from. Now therefore be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby give recognition and commends Lily Hawkins for the proper use of 911 and summoning aid in an emergency. Would the parents bring the young lady to us to receive the resolution, please? Resolution, I want to give her the official 911
badge.
There you go.
Hero badge. And would you hold one? Mom, and would you hold? Where's our dispatcher? You come up right here. Help me move the chair.
Go next. Are we all here?
Can I scoot by you here?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Hold on the chair.
Okay.
Have another nine.
Yeah.
Okay, tell us which camera to look at. So.
All of them.
Okay. 39.
Now, we're going to allow the parents say a few words if you use the podium downstairs, Lily.
If I may.
Okay. Before you get down, we have sheriffs to make another presentation. We're going to rotate you around this way, Lily. Don't go on.
Maybe she should be afraid.
Concho's got a hold of it right, yeah.
Lily, for your work and your courage, we're providing you with a 911 for Kids T-shirt. That you can proudly wear, showing that you knew how to use the system and you did it well. So that T-shirt is for you. And on behalf of the dispatchers at the Sheriff's Department, they want you to receive this 911 Hero Award for Lily Hawkins, April 24th, 2008.
Firstly, obviously I'm like extremely, extremely proud of my daughter, and her father couldn't be with us today. He's recuperating slowly, but he's so, so, so thankful. And obviously he's a permanently disabled human being, and he's had to use services like this quite often, and we just couldn't be more grateful that we have such an amazing team of people here in San Luis, and it's just amazing. Thank you so much. Lily, do you want to say anything?
Thank you.
Thank you. Quite a moving moment here for all of us. With that, we'll move on to our next presentation, and we have Dory Duke from Human Resources. Dory, would you introduce your item, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm Dory Duke with Marcy Goodell here from Human Resources Department. We are pleased to assist your board in your tradition of recognizing employees for their years of public service. The individuals being recognized today are dedicated employees who serve as an example to others as they contribute on a daily basis to the county's vision of a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community. Our first recipient is from the assessor's office. We have the county assessor, Tom Bordenaro, who will make the presentation. And Gayla Beck, if you would come to the right podium. Gayla, after you receive your award, you're welcome to make a statement and then approach the board so that they can offer their congratulations to you.
Bottom of the mic.
Bottom of the mic.
Put the light on. You got it.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. It's a pleasure for me to be here today to speak about Gayla Beck and her 25 years of service to the county. Gayla's been an exceptional employee throughout her career and has consistently been recognized for her dedication and skill. She started her career with the county on February 8, 1982. Actually, this is your 25th year, but I think that's now 26.
Yeah.
We don't call it Slow County for anything. But she started as a cashier in the treasurer's office, and in those days, much of the balancing process was manual, using a pencil and adding machine, a typewriter. For those of you historians, you know what a typewriter is. To balance and report on the $50 million treasury balance, the daily treasury balance back then. She excelled at her work and promoted to a senior account clerk. She worked in the tax section of the office, processing tax payments and then serving as the redemption senior. In 92, she was promoted to a supervising position, and over the years, supervised many different areas of the tax collector's office. She's well known for and respected for her tax knowledge by the staff in the department as well as other departments. And our office stole her away in January 19th of 2004. She decided to leave the dark side and come to the assessor's office. She supervises our tech crew, which is responsible for correctly interpreting the appraiser's values for the assessment system and ensure the values on all your tax bills are accurate. We call her the maestro of the supplemental tax system and revisions. So if any of you ever have questions on supplementals, there's the person to ask right there. Her ability to organize and plan the work of her section to recognize and solve problems has been absolutely invaluable. Between her knowledge on the tax collector's side and the assessor's side, she's helped literally hundreds, if not thousands, of taxpayers, members of the public, and coworkers to understand the intricacies of the assessment and tax system. And she does all of it, and I don't know how she does, with great patience and a world-famous smile. On a personal note, she's been married to her husband, Dan, as she says, forever. And I think that's a good thing, correct?
Yeah.
She's very involved with her family and her church and volunteers her spare time to benefit others. She loves to read, apparently, in her jammies. I don't know that firsthand. She collects angels and precious moments figurines and carries on the family tradition of preparing lefse during the holidays, which she learned from her dad.
Yeah.
She also manages to keep all the dentists in the county very happy. You know, Gayla, she has a See's Candy habit, and she always has See's Candy available for all of our office and many of the other offices of the county. And her friends and coworkers explain her very simply by saying that Gayla is the best friend and supervisor ever and is the most unselfish person on the planet. So, my pleasure. And I will bring your solid gold clock to you.
Actually, I do want to say thanks for the recognition. I can't believe it's been 25 years, well, 26 years. Today actually makes it a little bit special. I get to share it with Cecilia, one of the other recipients. I've known her for the 25 years, so I want to appreciate the recognition and work with a great bunch of people. So thank you.
Stare with the side so the screen doesn't block you.
Thank you. Next employee being recognized is Cecilia Dines from the County Auditor's Office, and if Jerry Seebach could come to the left podium, and Cecilia, if you could come to the right podium.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Jerry Seebach, Auditor Controller, thank you for this opportunity to honor a truly remarkable employee. Cecilia Dines began her career with the County of San Luis Obispo in 1982. As an accounting clerk in the tax collector's office. In 1985, she came to her senses and transferred to the auditor's office, where she has earned several promotions over the years. Cecilia is now a tax specialist, second in charge of our property tax division, capably filling in for her supervisor whenever necessary. citizens who have questions with their property taxes can always count on Cecilia to patiently explain the circumstances to them and to lend a sympathetic ear to their concerns. But she offers more than just sympathy. Our files are filled with notes from taxpayers thanking us for the help that Mrs. Dines has given them. She knows all the rules and who to send the taxpayer to if she can't help them herself. You ought to know also that for many years, Cecilia and her good friend Judy Cullen have spearheaded the annual Daffodil Days fundraiser on behalf of the American Cancer Society. They raised over $5,000 just this spring from staff members throughout the county to support the Cancer Society's life-saving programs. In addition to her ability to deal with upset taxpayers, we also appreciate Mrs. Dines' job knowledge, accuracy, attention to detail, and dedication to the auditor's office over the past 23 years. Mrs. Dines has two daughters, Chantel and Kimberly, who happens to be a valued member of the county pension trust staff. Cecilia lives with her husband, Craig, in Los Osos. The auditor's office is proud of Cecilia, looks forward to her working with us for many years to come.
Welcome to make a statement, Cecilia, if you'd like to make a statement.
Here's your chance, Cecilia.
Well, these 25 years have gone by really fast. And as Gayla said, this is kind of a special day because she and I started just a few months apart in the tax collector's office, and we've been friends ever since. And I feel really lucky to be working under Jerry and Bill Estrada. They're both wonderful people and great, great people. And I thank you all.
And that concludes our presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, AmeriCorps. We'll wait just a minute for the room to clear, and then we'll move to the public comment portion of our agenda. While we're waiting for the room to clear, I want to make the announcement that we did have an item scheduled for this afternoon that was going to take a considerable amount of time that was pulled from the agenda, and so we will not be meeting in open session this afternoon. I want to let the listening public know that there will be no afternoon session of the Board of Supervisors. After this morning session, we'll go to closed session. So at this point is public comment for items not on today's agenda, and I do have a few requests to speak. Please come to the front podium. We'll begin with Kim Wood, followed by Mark Schaefer.
Good morning. I'm Kim Wood, LaPanza Road in Creston. My issue today is the proposed site for the new Creston Fire Station. On January 28th, I had delivered to each of you a two-page list of concerns I have with this property. Far and above, the biggest concern is taking productive agricultural organic farmland out of production to blacktop and concrete it over for a new fire station. Those of you that have no idea where this site is, I invite you to come to Creston. I'd be happy to show you where the county and Cal Fire has proposed to cut the heart out of this agricultural field. Right now, this field is being planted to bell peppers. Irrigation going, beautiful, beautiful field, beautiful crop. It's a very viable piece of agricultural land that should not be taken out of production, in my opinion, for any reason. But it is an ag zoning, and the county has a 150-acre total parcel. The county has went and determined they want 3 acres of it out of the heart of it. Not only that, they want the buffer zone to protect the surrounding agriculture. It makes absolutely no sense in that there are other alternative sites. Mr. Patterson's well aware of them. For whatever reason, nobody in the county or Cal Fire wants to settle for anything other than what they deemed they... they presented a PowerPoint of all the list of criteria that they deemed that was necessary for their fire station. Well, I'll challenge that there's not another county fire station that meets the same criteria. I respectfully ask that you do not go forward with this site. Go for the alternative sites. Protect this nice piece of farm ground. And also considering how upside down the county is, $20 million shortfall, I don't see where we have the money to build a new fire station anyway. So please live within your budgets. Please protect this nice piece of farm ground. Again, I encourage you to come out and look at the site. And I'd be happy to show you the other alternative sites. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wood. Mark Schaefer, followed by David Dugan.
Good morning. I'm Mark Schaefer. I'm the Executive Director of United Cerebral Palsy, and I'd like to thank the Board of Supervisors for your resolution that was presented by Supervisor Gibson last Saturday at the Paul Wolf Accessibility Advocacy Awards at the Clark Center, supporting San Luis Obispo Life Without Limits Week, which is a celebration of the accomplishment of children and adults with disabilities, and also a focus on making our county accessible to all of our residents. The week is moving along. Today we have open house for all adult employment opportunities for people with disabilities. Thursday at the Vets Hall from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., we have 50 vendors at the Abilities Fair that will be presenting services and equipment that increase the independence for children, adults, and seniors with disabilities. The week concludes with our Access for All Film Festival this Friday at the City County Library, where we'll show The Station Agent at 5:30 and Children of a Lesser God at 7:30, and admission is free. Again, I'd like to thank you on behalf of United Cerebral Palsy and Access for All, and also to thank you for making our community accessible. And the last thank you is to our community, which is really opening doors to children and adults with disabilities. Thank you very much.
Mr. Schaefer, would you announce that event on Thursday again, please, so people on the listening audience?
Sure. The event is called the Slow Abilities Fair. It's the 8th year we've done it, and we have vendors from all over the state that are promoting services and equipment. And it's at the Vets Hall. It's free. Starts at 10 and goes until 3 p.m. And any information you need for relatives or for people that could use these services, it's really a great opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to mention that this was the fifth year I attended that event, and our county clerk, Julie Rodewald, was there as well. She and her department were nominated as one of the possible recipients of the award for their work in making voting more accessible to people with disabilities. And I want to thank Supervisor Gibson for presenting the resolution that this board had adopted the previous week. David Dugan?
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. Last Friday, I was at the Regional Water Quality Control Board where they passed the resolution for the basin plan update. And one of the things that happened was they were going to make five-year pumping criteria for all new septic tanks, and they changed their mind and changed it from shall to should as a recommendation, but they expect you guys to step up to the plate and figure something out to make sure that all these septic tanks that are going to be put in are inspected enough in enough periods of time to where they don't create the problems we have in Los Osos. But during public comment at the regional board, I was talking about the Los Osos project, and I told them that the county at this time is not really looking at a water recycle and reuse element, but just disposal, though there are some technical memos that are out on that that was presented to the TAC discussing these areas, that it's not a priority for this board. And I pointed it out, without a water reuse recycle, we end up having to import water at about $35 million plus. And it would be easier to have that out in a, as part of the process prior to building sending this out for contracts to be brought forward for this project. But Jeffrey Young wanted to talk about it. And I explained to him how Tri-W doesn't meet that, or the Midtown project. Site doesn't provide for that with the old project, and that there was no reuse element. And he was really interested in the fact that, and we started talking about it, the project. And I explained to him if we had it out of town, we could have the footprint for the recycle reuse, as well as septic receiving for the county. Because the county's going to have that going on. We can't keep sending it to Santa Maria, Bakersfield, Los Angeles. And also explained that the out-of-town site would allow us to have three money-making elements: the recycling of the water and reuse, the accepting the septage from places in San Luis Obispo County, as well as processing the solids into a usable product, fertilizer. That's three money-making elements that could be done outside of town but cannot be done at the Midtown site. So, and he was really interested in that, and we were talking about that, but of course their lawyer stopped this, saying we shouldn't discuss this because it may be coming before their board at some time. But I would hope you guys would look into that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Julie Rodewald, followed by Chief Deputy Rob Reed.
County Clerk Recorder. I'm really here to talk about the June 30 election, but I do want to put in a plug for the Abilities Fair this Thursday. My staff and I will be there with our accessible voting machines to demonstrate those, and also to register anyone. As you may well be aware, effective January 1st of this year, voters can register to vote with a signature stamp and can use that on their vote-by-mail ballots or when they go to the polls. They have to do that in person in front of one of our office staff, so we will be at the Abilities Fair to also register people with their signature stamp if they so choose. But my purpose here is to remind everybody that June 3rd is coming sooner than maybe we're all ready for. It's 21 days away today, but there is still time to register to vote. People have up until next Monday, the 19th, to complete a new voter registration card, and it has to be postmarked or into our office by that day. And we're certainly encouraging anyone who hasn't yet registered to get their registration into us so they can vote on June 3rd. Thank you.
Thank you. Julie, one moment. Supervisor Sashin wanted to make a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very glad to see Mr. Oldfield here reminding us of the coming events. I'm also here to remind everybody that it is her birthday, and I wish you a happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Chief Deputy Rob Reed, followed by Alan Perelman.
Good morning. My name is Rob Reed. I'm a Chief Deputy with the Sheriff's Department. Earlier this year, the county submitted an application for AB 900 jail funding for the expansion of the female jail. On May 8th, the recommendations for funding were presented to the Correction Standards Authority Board of Directors. San Luis Obispo County competed with 24 other counties for jail funding. We competed in the large and medium category, which means we were competing against Los Angeles, Orange, and San Diego counties. We came out number 9 on the list, and the recommendation was for funding through number 8. So we're next. One of the things that they stated very clearly at this meeting was that jail funding will be tied to reentry facilities. Those counties who site a reentry facility will be given jail funding. Those who do not will be pushed off until the second phase if they are funded at all. Each county who has received the recommendation for award must prove due diligence on their site within 90 days of May 8th, meaning they have to prove to the state of California that this property that they've selected, said where they want the reentry facility, is acceptable to CDCR, California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. If that site is not clear title, ready to go within 90 days, then it goes to the next county on the list. And in our case, we hope that somebody else may not be able to meet that need so that we can get the funding. The final decision for this is made on September 18th. No county has been awarded funding yet, but it's September 18th is when we're looking for that final notice that we get to go forward. And if the board has any questions, I can answer at this time regarding that.
Yeah. Supervisor Gibson.
Yeah, just real quickly, Chief. There was a question as to, you know, whether we do a slightly bigger project or a slightly reduced project based on medical facilities. Where are we in that decision-making process? Would we be in line to do the larger project still, or have we dropped back to only the jail expansion?
If we do not receive jail funding, it's a meeting we're going to be having with the administrative office this Wednesday, tomorrow, to determine where we go with that project.
Okay. And would we meet that criteria of having a site available for a reentry facility should one of the other counties fall out and San Luis Obispo County be considered? Would we meet the criteria, or is there something that we need to do between now and then to ensure that we have a site available?
We're very fortunate that the state currently owns the property, so we have most of the due diligence completed. We do need to get a letter from the state saying that they will accept their own property. We also need support of the local community to accept a reentry site. So we do have a couple more steps to do yet, but we're very close compared to many other counties.
Okay, and I know that you've been meeting with the local community too. Is that going well?
It seems to be going well. We have a meeting this afternoon, and then there's also another meeting scheduled for next week with the city of Paso Robles.
Very good, thank you. And Mr. Edge.
Yeah, just quickly, Mr. Chairman, we think that given, like Rob indicated, we're hopeful that something may fall out in the next 90 days that allows us to proceed with the project with some state funding. If not, I think our inclination right now would be to recommend that we hold off for the second round of funding, given the how close we were this time, with the expectation that we should be right on the top of the list in a second round of funding. So we'll have to discuss that in more detail.
And when will the second round occur?
I'm talking about, Rob, I don't think there's a specific, a couple of years at least.
That is dependent. According to the statute, cannot move into phase two of funding until 4,000 beds statewide, local jail beds, have started. And once they start construction on those 4,000 beds, then they can move into phase two.
Okay, but any idea how long that
considering where some of the projects are and some of the large counties who are in one project is close to building most of those beds, it could be as soon as, you know, June of next year. It could be further out.
Okay, very good. Any other questions for
I was just going to say thanks to Rob and crew. We were up there listening to other people make presentations, and I want to thank his crew and everybody for what we did, and we had some good compliments back of how we are prepared and ready to go, as opposed to some of the other counties that presented.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Sajian?
Should we have any opportunity at one of those, I feel like that hotel advertising, you know? We should have moved our meeting to Holiday Inn. Would there be an opportunity that one of those top eight might fall off and get kicked in?
Yes, there are. I don't want to speak for other counties, but from what I heard at the CSA board meeting, there are a couple of counties that have some contentious issues with the sites that they have recommended. And there's one county who has yet to provide that siting. They have 90 days to do it, and as we found out, 90 days may not be enough time to find a site and get all the documents necessary done. So
we might know something in 90 days rather than waiting 2 years.
At the end of 90 days, pretty much I should be able to say we're up and ready to go and we're getting funded, or should be getting funded, because you can never...
You let us know. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Elon Perelman?
Thank you. I was to come before you today on a different matter. I wear several hats, but my thoughts may not be fully organized, but they do relate to the Water Board hearings that took place on the 9th. I want to thank Bruce Gibson, supervisor, for making a short appearance there. He left the speaking portion to county staff. That is currently showing on the same channel. If you're watching this, you probably can watch the Water Board hearings. But one thing is that there's a lot of the way it was recorded, it was not gavel to gavel, and there's a lot of items that do not concern this county. So I hope that the short portion is shown. The bottom line there is that the basin changes are, and I'm just throwing a rough estimate right now, Mr. Edge is outside. I think this is going to cost you about $6 million to be able, which I'm sure you'll find in your budgets, to be able to implement the directives of the Water Board. Because the Water Board, unfortunately, while the changes to the basin plans are long overdue, they include, for example, some very good things, controls over salt, generating water purifiers that damage groundwater, et cetera, et cetera. Those changes have been actually on the books. I've seen a draft that contains most of what they had in there, and it had the seal of the state with Governor Wilson. These are changes that have been brought. The reason you are seeing this now is actually because of delays in Assembly Bill 885. What the Water Board is doing is that they're throwing the enforcement element ahead of some of the science. And you should listen very carefully to some of what is said there. Septage is going to be a problem. The Water Board attitude to the septage, and it's there in Mr. Shellcross's comments, is if the counties can't find a solution to their septage problem, they should not build. These are very serious matters. Please study this extremely carefully. Please allow the public to understand what is going on here. Do not use the law and order excuse. This is a government agency that are doing their job. There is a severe lack of scientific correlation with what is going on there, and there's also a lack of an administrative process. I mean, when you go to smog your car, it's complicated, but it's done through stages. You are now asked, as all the other counties are being asked, to actually evaluate modern systems. This is not a centrally designed argument. This is simply enforcement without the administrative infrastructure, which you as a county are going to have to provide. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. That was my last request to speak for public comment on items not on the agenda this morning. So we'll move on to our first hearing item, which is item C1. Madam Clerk, would you introduce that item, please?
Item C1 is a hearing to consider amendments to Title 26 of the County Code, the Growth Management Ordinance, regarding cleanup of outdated references and information and to provide better understanding and efficiency all districts. Recommend this item be continued to August 12, 2008.
Thank you. And Ms. Manson, you'll introduce this for us, or at least give the Planning and Building Departments or John Hoshauer, how's that going to work?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Hoshauer, County Planning Staff. We are requesting a continuance. We've developed our cleanup package to the Growth Management Ordinance. We've gone through our public review phase. We've actually got the Planning Commission to review it, and they are recommending an approval. And recently we discovered some technical difficulties in the ordinance. So we're going to do some further editing. These are minor changes in working with our county council, and our first date that we could find was August 12th, when we could be back on your agenda. Again, this is just simply cleanup of the growth management ordinance. It's fixing errors, omissions, and so forth. So anyway, our recommendation today is to continue to August 12th.
Okay, thank you. Questions from members of the board? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public. I have no request to speak on this item, so I'll bring it back to the board.
Will staff's recommendation?
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Staff's recommendation to continue the meeting to August 12th. So all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item C2, Madam Clerk.
Item C2 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Morrow Shores of the Planning Director's decision to deny a request for a stay of expiration for Tract 1643 located at the northeast of the corner of Los Osos Valley Road and Broderson Avenue in the community of Los Osos, 2nd District. This item was continued from March 4, 2008. Recommend denial of the appeal.
Okay. Thank you. And who will be making the presentation here?
Ms. Brown or Mr.
Stevenson? Yeah. I think right. John McKenzie. It has Terry Brown as the staff person. Chuck Stevenson, item C2, the Morrow Shores project.
There she comes.
Seems like they were consulting
here they come.
The attorney outside.
When in doubt, ask Chuck.
Ms. Brown, I believe your item's up.
Sorry about that. Recently, last week, planning staff received a withdrawal of the appeal of the Morrow Shores appeal. And in my conversations with council, this means that the planning director's determination, the denial of the appeal, stands. And I believe that no further action is needed by the board. But I'm available for any questions.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Brown or planning staff? Supervisor Ovid.
Just one question. Since you've got legal staff here, I noticed in the letter they stated that they were waiting the outcome of the legislative issue that's before us. Is there any determination on whether that affects this project if they withdraw their appeal?
Jim Orton from County Council's office, I believe the legislation he was referring to was the extensions of the map, and if those go through, if the map would be extended for, I believe it's 2 more years, and right now it's due to expire in September of 08. So
I just want to get it clarified that with their withdrawal, their map is still good, and if the pending legislation comes forward, as you said, then they would automatically be given another 2 years.
Right, if it's urgency legislation as is proposed. That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions of staff at this point? Supervisor Gibson?
Question of procedure here, just to be clear, because I think the record does need to be clear. We've tried to resolve, or I've asked, attempted to get this resolved over the course of time. Should we formally, or I'd be prepared to make a motion to formally accept the withdrawal and note the planning director's decision stands in this matter?
You can do that. You're not legally required to, but that's an option. The effect of the withdrawal of the appeal is exactly that.
Okay. As long as we're clear on the record that that's the case.
Okay, very good. I do have a number of requests to speak on this item, and I don't know if the members that wanted to speak on it were aware of the situation, but I will open it to the public and call those. Thank you, Ms. Brown. Call those forward who have requested to speak. David Dugan, followed by George Taylor.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. If it could be done lawfully, then I would have requested that to extend this, if the legislation had come through in time, it wouldn't have made any difference. But I think what the problem may be here is that fees may have been paid, certain requirements had already been met, and that perhaps the cost and the time and effort to take place if this tentative track map is no longer vested, that these people don't want to spend extra money that they've already spent again. And I would just suggest that this board can waive parts of and all certain fees, all of certain fees. I'm sure that you can, and that you should look at how much money they've spent and time and effort they've put into doing this. And if the county's received money from them for trying to get these houses built, that perhaps you should look at waiving some of any new monies that they would have to pay to the county, any or all. And other than that, I have any problems with that land being developed, and that other than that, it should be required to follow the conservation of the new ordinances that have been passed, as well as maybe a requirement for xeriscape for those properties, or a reuse element of water for those properties. So just looking at the future. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. George Taylor, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good morning, board. My name is George Taylor from Los Osos. I will admit that I was taken really by surprise that this had been withdrawn, the appeal had been withdrawn. But I think that it's good to acknowledge the good work that the staff did in their preparations up to this point. The planning director, down to the staff people, and county council, and especially to our former county council, who came forth at the previous hearing, I believe the original hearing, and gave you a very, very strong legal opinion. And I say that I know that those that are on staff now are still very much of the mind that Mr. Lindholm was. And I'm glad that this has been withdrawn, but it still was a lot of staff work, and they did a great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Gwen Taylor, followed by Elon Perelman.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. And to carry on with what my husband said, not only did Mr. Yolanda do a wonderful job in determining that this tract map should not be continued, but also the staff, Carrie Brown, did an excellent job of getting all of the facts and information for several different presentations available to the public. On February the 26th of this year, the Council for Morrow Shores asked for a 60-day extension. That 60 days has come and gone. Fortunately, they have withdrawn their appeal. And the county has no legal authority to authorize any additional stays that conflict with those set forth in the Subdivision Map Act. I should hope that this extension of this tract map has died, that it is no longer on the books, and that even if there is an extension that comes forth through the state, that this is not applicable to this tract map. Thank you very much, and please stand by the law.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Alon Perelman.
Thank you. Reset the clock. Thank you. I am here. I was to come here as a member of LOCAC. I'm a member of Los Osos Community Advisory Council, and our chair, Carol Marr, had written several letters requesting you to deny extensions of this appeal. Obviously, with the withdrawal of the appeal, the letter might be moot. But this is a letter that has been sent to you, and it was my intention to read it into the record. At this point, I'm asking you to recognize that I'm no longer speaking as a member of LOCAC. I'm speaking as a private individual. And as a private individual, I'm very concerned that that letter written by LOCAC was necessary. It was necessary because it appeared to be that you as, and not every supervisor, of course, but it appeared to be that you were not going to be following the legal advice of the people you pay to give you legal advice. And it appeared to be that part of your considerations involved a law that is in early stages in the state legislature, and the question of whether that law is a good idea or not is irrelevant. You were appearing to put this matter onto a back burner and regulate it to committee and recycling, and it just looked as if this was simply going to be put on so that the state law could eventually catch up with it. And that, in itself, would be illegal. Deferring a matter for time considerations would be one thing, but the advice that was given to you as a board by your legal staff was not to extend, and therefore the fact that it was transferred further into discussion, I think it was wrong, and I think that should be pointed out. With regard to the tract itself, it was divided quite a long time ago. It is located right under the contentious Trice W site. That's, these sites are in the center of Los Osos. This involves about couple of hundred acres. Right above the site is the Broderson, what was designed for the Tri-W sewer as the leach field. And right at the site is the Tri-W. The Palisades project is going to put stormwater onto the Tri-W property. So there's a nexus of hydrologic and nature conservation and fire. There are an incredible number of issues that are related to these properties that may very well require some very complex mitigations. And I had looked at that track map as it was original design. It was just your basic medium density track. So I see my time is up. I just wish you to consider that the withdrawal of this motion, of the appeal, does not necessarily reflect nicely on you. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. That was my last request to speak, so I'll bring it back to the board for action. Supervisor Gibson?
Mr. Chairman, I think just maybe we could have staff briefly clarify the situation on the track map as it exists right now, and how the state legislation might or might not affect it.
Carrie Brown, County Planning Staff. As it exists right now, the map is set to expire in September of this year. I'm not familiar with the state legislation, so I'm going to let County Council address that issue.
If the state legislation is passed as urgency legislation, it would apply to all maps in effect at the date it became effective. And so I think the applicant is thinking that this legislation will probably pass, and if it does, it would apply to his map because he believes it will go into effect before it expires in September.
And that would be a two-year extension from the time of any
That's correct.
Expiration date of any track map. Okay. And again, I'd ask the advice of County Council on whether any action is necessary or whether we simply close the matter at this point.
No, there's no action required.
Okay.
Very good. So with that, thank you. Thank you, Carrie. Thank you, Mr. Orton. We'll move on to the final public hearing item of the morning, item D1. Madam Clerk, would you introduce that, please?
Item D1 is the annual review of the county growth rate in accordance with Title 26 of the County Code, Growth Management Ordinance, and the submittal of a resolution approving the proposed growth rate and allowing the additional carryover 10% of last year's allocation, all districts. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Okay, thank you. So, planning staff, you have a presentation this morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. John Hofshore, I'm a supervising planner at your permit center for the Department of Planning and Building. With me today is Joe Manson. Joe is the planner that manages your growth management ordinance on a daily basis. I have just several remarks about growth management, and then I'm going to turn it over to Joe, and she has a short PowerPoint. Just to begin, the county has had the growth management ordinance for almost 18 years. It was an effort that was started by the voters of San Luis Obispo County, but eventually it was an ordinance that was created by your Board of Supervisors and written by the county. The overlying theme of the ordinance was to basically prevent growth from outstripping your resources. And this is an ordinance that works hand-in-hand with your resource management system. And just by way of explanation, every year your board looks at the resource management system and makes an assessment of critical resources such as road capacities, water supplies, and abilities of school districts to handle the demand. Growth management ordinance is a metering tool. It only prevents the worst case scenario, which would be when we find ourselves in the situation where growth is outstripping your resources and the board would be forced to do something there. Growth management in the context today, you'll hear us talk about numbers and percentages. Remember that these are maximum numbers, and the downswing in the economy, both the international, national, and statewide economies, has left us with a growth rate that's far less than 2.3% in the last few years. Also, keep in mind that growth management will not affect cities. It will not affect those exemptions which you have in place for affordable housing, such as secondary dwellings, farm support quarters, and a number of other categories. So when we talk about certain numbers of dwelling units, keep in mind some are regulated, but there is that amount that are going through that together will provide the total growth. As I mentioned, you conducted your review of the resource situation of this county. We took that information as the factual basis to take a look at the growth rates and then bring to you a recommendation. One feature of the growth management ordinance is that every year, again, you look at your rates just like you look at your resource opportunities or your resource problems in any given community. So for a number of reasons, staff is recommending that you maintain the 2.3%, understanding that it's a maximum, and that according to the ordinance, you also consider a 10% carryover. So with that introduction, I'm going to turn this over to Joe Manson, and she can walk you through a short PowerPoint.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Joe Manson, Information Services Group, County Planning. Today, planning staff is providing your board with a review of the annual growth rate. I would like to focus on two elements of the growth management ordinance related to the annual growth rate for the upcoming fiscal year 2008-2009 and the allowance for additional carryover of 10% of the allotments. This slide illustrates historical allocation use during the period from 1991 to the end of fiscal year 06-07. As you can see, there was a brief period between 1999 to 2002 where the number of available allocations were fully utilized with submittal of residential building permits. Planning staff is recommending at this time that your board maintain the countywide 2.3% growth rate. And the planning staff is recommending that your board maintain the Napomo Mesa 1.8% growth rate. This graphic illustrates the Mesa area. The growth management ordinance allows a carryover of a maximum 10% of the previous year's allotments. Or a little, just a summary of the history. In fiscal year 06-07, 37% of potential allocations were used. This fiscal year, 07-08, as of April 28, 2008, 29% of potential allocations have been used. We did do a projection that is included in the staff report for the end of this fiscal year. We projected 31% of potential allocations will be used. Staff feels that a carryover to be appropriate because the two-year trend will not exceed the 2.3% growth rate. Currently, this fiscal year, the 10% carryover does not apply to the Napomo Mesa. We are recommending that your board maintain this position. The next slide shows the number of dwelling units your board would authorize for fiscal year 2008-2009. 1,100 dwelling units countywide and 128 dwelling units for the Napomo Mesa. So staff's recommendation is that you would adopt and instruct the chairman to sign the attached resolution to the staff report to approve the annual growth rate of 2.3% for areas not in Resource Management System RMS Level 3, and allow the additional carryover 10% of last year's allotments. That concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Very good. Supervisor Linthal, question for staff.
Yes, and if I may, I have a great deal of respect for Mr. Orlando, but Mr. Orlando, I need to put you on the spot for a moment. Could you step to the podium, please? In reading this and in looking at the history here, I'm curious how much staff time is required to maintain what we're doing to ensure that the ordinances comply, the 10% figures, crunch numbers, things of that nature. And if you could just give me an estimate of, you know, how much effort you're putting in that, because if it hasn't been a problem and we haven't addressed this in so many years, I'm wondering if our staff time could be put to better use in our times of budget constraints. So could you comment about how much time you think this takes as far as labor?
Again, I'm Vic Hollanda, the Director of Planning and Building. The amount of time and effort put into the growth management ordinance update maintenance, if you will, annually since we started the program is a considerable amount of time. And in a few moments, I'll tell you some dollar amounts. But keep in mind that probably for the first 7 or 8 years, we did this literally by hand, and in the last years we've done it with the help of technology, so our costs have gone down relative to staff commitment. Now, having said that, it's interesting you asked a question because I was asking staff the same similar question. We're looking in the aggregate of about $25,000 annually, and this includes all staff time participating in working with our key staff to put the numbers together, to crunch the numbers, and give the report that you see on an annual basis. That $25,000 plus is, and to put it in layman's terms, is probably, or you could probably say it's half time of an administrative assistant. So what's the so what factor there? An administrative assistant probably could be used to assist staff relative to staff reports, report writing, public information counter, long-range planning, strategic planning, things of that nature. So that's how, in essence, the policy in saying, let's do a growth management ordinance, dedicate staff resources to this initiative, and it's costing us, in essence, halftime of a, in real time, a administrative assistant, about halftime.
Can I add one thing to this? Just in the history, we've actually changed the method of accounting. When the program first started out, they used to do it with allocations so that you were only allocated so many. This did not reflect what the true issue was. And when it came off of allocation to actual permits requested, it reduced the amount of time staff's involvement. It reduced the accounting that had to be done. And what we get today is an actual picture of what's happening. So if you saw in that chart up there, those number of those three-year time period, the end of that is when we got off that allocation, because the allocation system was not truly representing what was going on in the application process.
And I appreciate that. And if I may, Mr. Orlando, I guess the question I think that I need answered in my mind is that would that staff time or $25,000 worth of capital be better spent on some other projects? We've asked you, like a lot of departments, to cut back in certain areas. Can you give me an example off the top of your head, or tell me where you think maybe we could put that money or that staff time to better use?
Well, you know, for instance, public information. We have a lot of people come to the front counter. We have one, two, three staff persons at the front counter, whether they're planners or not. If we could put a planner who is working at the front counter, in essence, working back at their cubicle on a staff report or another project, and having an administrative type person, maybe even a permit technician type person at the front counter responding to that type of questions, would that be more cost efficient, cost effective? In all probability, yes. And that's the best use of resources. But under the circumstances, and like other departments, we are, you know, respecting your wants and needs.
I appreciate your candor. Thank you.
Any other questions for staff before I open it to the public? Seeing none, I do have one request to speak, so I'll open it to the public. And Jerry Bunin.
Government Affairs Director, Home Builders Association. I think I see you every year on this. One thing I really want to talk about today is I really think the 10% is kind of silly, to be simple about it. I think many of you know that I track building permits countywide. I do it on an annual basis. The report's on a fiscal basis, so my numbers are annual. 50% of all the homes built in this county are built in the unincorporated area. The annual average is 1,500 homes. Last year, it was down 33% from the average. For the first quarter of this year, we're down another 35%. We are on pace to build the fewest new homes in the county since 1992, and the lowest, second lowest years in the last 25 years. So limiting this to a 10% carryover, assuming that someday we're going to turn this around, is really not a very effective means of addressing a housing market that always tends to be somewhat cyclical. Since we're not building, it's a good time to think about changing that and coming up with a more effective means of dealing with it. I also don't think that either the growth management ordinance or the carryover addresses market realities, and you at least ought to try and keep it real. And any growth problems we have in this county are not related to the growth management ordinance. They're related to zoning, when, where, and how much. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I ask Mr. Bunin a question also?
Sorry?
May I ask Mr. Bunin a question?
Absolutely.
Also?
You could ask Jerry a question. Thank you.
Supervisor Lintel.
Thank you. Jerry, I'd just like to follow up on what Mr. Orlando suggested, because I'm curious, from your contacts of the houses that we build, of the context that we have, the interaction with planning, the permit process, the plan check, the counter, the things that he's talking about, that do you have an idea of how maybe this money can be better spent, or can we improve our quality? Because I occasionally get questions, comments, and concerns, and even a complaint here or there, that we don't get information out timely, or that the counter staff might be overworked someday when it's busy. I realize it's not a problem when, you know, the permits go down, but when things are moving along, And from your perspective, I would be interested in what you think would be perhaps another option or a better way or a way we can improve doing business.
We are talking to Mr. Holanda and some of the staff about these kinds of issues. We find that, surprisingly enough, one of the biggest problems is getting time on the Planning Commission agenda. There's so many different things that are going on that I know people with projects that aren't able to bring them through. I know People's Self-Help has told me that it's a problem. And certainly a growth management ordinance that I was surprised to see that there were 3 years or 4 years that we hit the total. I thought there was only one that we'd gotten to the total.
We actually never hit it. That was allocation.
Okay. So the point being is we're not even close. It's not – growth is not a problem in terms of numbers. It's a problem in terms of the amount of time it takes to get through the process. So if we had more ability to for the staff to work with projects and bring them along or to get on Planning Commission agendas through the process, yeah, I think that would be an improvement. And I think spending money on this, on an annual report that we're not even getting close to that could be taken care of in an easier way would be a very good improvement. We have other suggestions we're sharing with Mr. Holanda before we bother you guys with them. So, yeah.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you. Any other questions for Jerry? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board for action and comments. Any discussion Move. Among board members?
Move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay.
And if I may, just under discussion.
Okay. It was moved by Supervisor Gibson, second by Supervisor Sajjan, Supervisor Linthal.
Yeah, I'm wholeheartedly supporting the motion. What I would like to see if my colleagues would give some direction and inclination is to have Mr. Holanda have some flexibility here to do some future analysis and see if perhaps this money could be better spent or if this time could be put to better use, and especially in this time where we've asked him to cut back on services, like all departments and things, I think he needs some flexibility to go out with his staff and report back to us if there perhaps this should be a change of policy, this money could be better spent, especially this next year, doing something different.
Okay. Supervisor Gibson?
At this point, I'm not inclined to amend the motion because I think Mr. Holanda has that flexibility built in.
No, not the motion. I'm asking if this, my colleagues would indulge in that to give him that direction, aside from the motion, just for the discussion before we vote and leave because this is the last item. I didn't want to rush out of here.
Yeah.
But I think that, and I'm not speaking for Mr. Holanda, but I think he would appreciate some direction from the board, and if my colleagues say, yeah, we think that's a good idea, I would like to see us give him instructions to say, go explore that further and report back to us.
What I was going to say was that I think he has that within his discretion as the head of the planning department. It seems to me we have an ordinance in place that requires an annual report. Part of the ordinance is to set the growth rate every year. And so I don't think that the activity can be waived. We can't simply not look into how growth is occurring in this county. We have to come and make this decision per the ordinance every year. If Mr. Holanda can find a way of getting us the information we need to make this decision in a more efficient manner than $25,000, you know, that's great. But a half of an administrative assistant doesn't seem to me to be a huge investment to dispatch the requirements that we have under the ordinance as it is right now.
Okay. Supervisor Ovid.
Thank you. I tend to think that we're kind of picking on a little small piece. What I'm looking at here is not necessarily what I consider to be the major issue, but I do agree with Mr. Gibson that Mr. Holanda does have the flexibility on how he can set his department up because these are all within budget, and again, it may be a budgetary issue. I think Mr. Bunin brought up the biggest issue that we have right now is that those people who are actually paying for staff time or got projects in there and having to wait 6 to 9 months to get a decision, even when staff's reports are all finished, is the bigger major issue right now. And I would say that if this board wanted to, that, and I know I've had conversations with Mr. Holanda on it, is that we need to say that we need to put more emphasis on those people who are actually paying the money into this department and getting them expeditiously through than we are other things that are actually costing money and may not be relevant at this particular point. And I'm going to leave that open because we could get a long discussion on each one of those. But I think the issue here is that if this board said to Mr. Holanda, we need to kind of look at this, and that I think he would do.
Okay. And I just want to comment too briefly that I think the growth management ordinance is a good tool, and the fact that we haven't in the last couple of years really gotten close to the maximum on that. That doesn't mean that hopefully things will turn around and it will be a useful tool to us. And certainly Mr. Alanda has the discretion as department head to determine how best to provide that information to us. And I too want to comment on what Supervisor Ovid said, that the biggest concern I hear from people with applications before the county is the time it takes to process them. And I think we need to try to address that issue as best we can. And if there are items that focus on a particular project waiting in the queue to get to the Planning Commission, perhaps those should be bumped ahead a little bit in the line over issues that involve ordinance changes and policy and that sort of thing, just to get those projects through the process a little quicker. But then with that comment, I'll go ahead and call for the motion. It is a roll call vote, so Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Ovid.
Aye.
Mr. Lovethal.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye. Okay. Thank you. It's now time to move into closed session. I'll ask for public comment on items on the closed session agenda, but I have no request to speak, so I'll close it and bring it back to the board and ask Mr. Cash how long he expects us to be in closed session this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your board is going to be meeting on items listed on the agenda in closed session, and I estimate approximately an hour.
Okay, and with that, since we haven't taken a break here in the last couple of hours, we'll adjourn to closed session, and closed session will convene at 10:30.
You're going to Sacramento again.
Well,
you're not going to know what you're going to have all the traffic then.
You know, I'll still get there before I do. Yeah.